Stand in this hall, either in the balcony or on the floor. You must be in a seat. Also, he asked me to point out to you that we have 5 exits from the hall. This will be of use to you when you try to leave tonight, when we get a little backed up. There's 2 exits on the floor to the rear, 2 exits to the rear in the balcony, and for those, anybody who, in the hall who wishes to use it, there's an exit off to my left behind me on the stage. You're welcome to use that when town meeting is adjourned. Also, the parking lot was a bit backed up when you tried to leave last night. There are more police officers there to try to alleviate that. For those of you who think it's a good idea to get around the traffic by going down Water Row, I recommend against it. It's flooded. Those of you who own a Hummer, feel free. Coffee and snacks tonight are being provided by the Lincoln Sudbury Student Exchange Program. You're welcome to partake of that. Our Eagle Scout, Owen Boyle, is out there to take your used cell phones and collect those. He's where the stacks are. Also reminding everyone to turn off your cell phones, please. And remember, when you're recognized to speak, please give your name and address so we can keep a record. If you desire to be recognized, the only way to do so is by raising your hand. Do not go to the 3 standing mics, one in each aisle and one here at the podium. Do not stand there. You will not be recognized. You must be recognized first by me and then proceed to either one of the floor mics, or we have some terrific Boy Scouts who we owe a debt of gratitude to, who will be runners, 2 in the rear and 2 in the front. For those of you in the middle of the rows who wish to speak, they will get a microphone over to you. Click it on, and after you're recognized, then you can speak. Motions to amend. They must be in writing, given to me, the town clerk, and Jan Silva, before you make the amendment to the microphone. Just because you have an amendment and give it to me, it does not necessarily mean that you're going to be recognized. You have to be recognized from the floor just like anyone else. Again, only registered voters and non-resident employees can speak at town meeting. If you are a non-resident and not an employee of the town, we'll ask you to stay in the back of the hall, either in the back of the balcony or the back of the hall here. Very important tonight, the first order of business is the budget. It's important to caution you, after the vote is taken, not to leave. There's 2 good reasons for that. One, it's discourteous to your neighbor who's going to stay here and has listened to your arguments on the budget. But there's another very practical reason for not bolting the hall, and that is anyone can ask for reconsideration anytime during the evening with a 2/3 vote. So that you, in order there not to be a different amount of people voting, you're well advised to stay throughout the evening. Also, our bylaws require presenters to speak for only 10 minutes and speakers to speak for only 5 minutes. For those of you who think that your words of wisdom will go longer and the hall has to hear them, be advised that last night, on 2 occasions, the only 2 occasions when speakers asked for more time, this hall denied them the right to speak longer. So tailor your talks to 10 minutes for presenters, 5 minutes for speakers.
Reaches.
Also, there'll be no hissing, booing, whistling, clapping, or any other audible sounds before, during, or after the time that anyone is speaking. And of course, as always, speakers may not make disrespectful comments to any other speaker, to a town official, or to anyone. Also, those of you who don't speak very often at town meeting, I encourage you to be heard. That's one of the reasons we have these runners here, so that if you're not sitting there in the aisle, you'll be able to speak quite readily. Head counts. As you saw yesterday, Connector Hall with tellers, because of the number of people we had here, and we had over 1,300 voters here last night. Taking a teller count takes a great deal of time. It is your absolute privilege to ask for one. What happened last night was that I tried to take a standing count and get an approximation. When I call for a standing count without tellers, and you see me pointing and trying to count, I'm not trying to count every voter. I'm trying to get a rough approximation to see if the vote is at all close. If it is at all close, I will ask for a teller count. It turns out that when I did the count here in the hall on Article 2, the vote was very, very close. When I called Mr. Blacker in the cafeteria, there were more voters in that hall than there were here. Mr. Blacker on a call had a 4-1 negative vote. You didn't see that here. So that when we actually went to the teller count, that's almost exactly how the vote went. So just you should be aware of that, and I will try to report to you what the result of a head count is from the cafeteria. Ask me when the override last night
people that are
adjourned,
not
when will the override
of the quorum for town meeting tonight?
And the answer is right out of the box. Article 5
quiet down those people.
Is the operation.
If they want to sit there and talk, then have them go outside.
That was voted a week ago Monday. And in addition, we also have Articles 10 and 11 that you also should be aware of. There's a debt exclusion there, and I think one of them is a smaller capital override. That brings us to the budget articles. Before I call on the Finance Committee to make a presentation on the state, the financial state of the town, I'd like to review with the voters how the procedure is, particularly for those of you who haven't been to town meeting before. Those of you who have been to town meeting, we're using the same procedure we have for the last several years. And that is, as a result of the election a week ago Monday, it's my understanding that the Finance Committee will present an override budget to this town meeting. The first thing we will do is take a motion from the FinCom proposing a budget that would be limited to the amount which would be required to finance the override budget proposal. The motion will seek only a declaration from the hall as to the overall limit on the budget. A vote in favor of the motion will not, I repeat, not, mean that you have voted for a particular distribution of the total amount set forth in the warrant. After we finish with the limiting motion, we will then move immediately to address the budget as a whole in the usual way, and then after we do that, line item by line item, we will then vote the budget. So let me run over that the latter part, that second motion, which would be on the budget. There'll be a main motion on the budget, there'll be a second. And this is how we'll deal with motions to amend and questions. I will start by reading the budget in numerical order by title. If anyone has a motion to amend or a question, just raise your hand. For example, as we go along, I will say 200. Public safety. Does anyone have a question or a comment or a motion to amend? If none, we'll go on to the next category. If someone wants to make a motion to amend, it can only be in the following way. I move to increase 200 public safety to the sum of X and to reduce, for example, line 600, culture and recreation, to the sum of Y. These two sums, the amount being added to one and subtracted from the other, have to match. No further statement of funds is necessary by the person making the motion to amend. The second way to do it is to simply move to reduce, for example, 200 public safety to the sum of X. No further statement of funds needs to be made. What is not legal is you cannot make a motion simply to increase a line item that will not be accepted.
You have to reduce another line item. And the reason for this is because we will have already voted the limiting motion. And we can't go above that amount. Finally, we will debate and vote on each motion to amend. We will arrive at the end of the process with a main motion as it may have been amended, and the wording should be agreeable to all, and then we will vote on it. I now recognize co-chairman of the Finance Committee, Bob Jacobson, who will give us a general discussion of the budget. Mr. Jacobson will speak first, followed by the town manager and the two school committees, and then we'll make the limiting motion.
Good evening. I didn't even start yet, Ralph.
And I believe that this organized sequence of speakers in the aggregate has 10 minutes by your call.
Thank you. Thank you for the point of order. It's out of order with respect to Mr. Jacobson's speech. He's now going to give us a general discussion of the financial state of the town. As soon as he finishes that, he will then make a limiting motion. Mr. Jacobson.
I'd like to first thank all of you for taking the time to be here tonight. This is your town meeting, and as the population of Sudbury continues to grow, it is important that a decreasing proportion of the town's residents not make these key decisions. For the past 2 years, the Finance Committee has come before you with recommendations for only no override budgets. For fiscal year 06, the Finance Committee strongly recommends approval of the override budget being considered, which is $800,000 less than requested. The FinCom takes its responsibility very seriously and does not offer this recommendation lightly or with indifference to the financial impact this may have on some of Sudbury's taxpayers. Those wanting more in town services and from the schools feel that we are not recommending enough to provide the levels of service they desire. Those wanting to minimize the taxes they pay feel that the levels of service provided under this budget are far more than is necessary. We have heard loudly from both sides. The FinCom's responsibility, though, is not to try and make people happy, something I'm sure we're being incredibly successful at tonight. Our responsibility is to recommend to town meeting a budget that, in our collective opinion, provides for levels of service that are in the best interest of the town of Sudbury as a whole. How did we get to this point where we feel the need to recommend an override of this magnitude? In fiscal year 04, Sudbury saw a reduction in its overall state aid. It was then level funded in fiscal year 05 and is projected to be level funded again in fiscal year 06. That means the town is working with less in revenue from the state in fiscal year 06 than it was in fiscal year 03. On the cost side, pensions, insurance, and benefits have been growing at double-digit rates annually, along with utility rate increases. Salary costs have increased the past 2 years and will increase in fiscal year 06 anywhere from 2.25% to 3.5% in accordance with cost of living adjustments under collectively bargained agreements, exclusive of any applicable step increases. It is important to note, however, that the town's and school's employees are not paid above average versus our peer Metro West towns. As a matter of fact, many are paid below average versus peer towns. There are 69 pages of financial information and data included in the Finance Committee's report portion of the town warrant, if you wish to review more specific information. There are other factors that are having a large impact on the budget. The percentage of the town population under the age of 19 is 34%. The percentage of homes in Sudbury with children is 52%. Both of these figures purport to be the highest in the state of Massachusetts. While this is a tribute to the level of education our schools provide and greatly helps to support Sudbury's home valuations, it strains the budget to keep class sizes from ballooning, meet the demands for extracurricular activities and course offerings, and provide mandated special education programs. The town's voters also made decisions to undertake a large school construction program not too long ago. While this greatly impacts the budget, the foresight to undertake these projects when we did also allows the town to receive sizable reimbursement percentages from the state. This is an issue that our neighbors in Wayland, Concord, Wellesley, and Newton are currently struggling with as their schools become insufficient in size and capabilities without concrete knowledge of what financial aid, if any, they will receive from the state towards new construction. The increased population in Sudbury, now totaling more than 18,000 residents, is also straining town services for public safety, park and rec, and the library, among others. For the past 2 years, the increase in the non-pension insurance and benefits portions of the budget have been limited, and in some cases, items were cut. The expected result of the Finance Committee's recommendation of these cuts and limited increases has been to reduce the services provided by the town, allow class sizes to grow, and limit some class and activity offerings by the schools. Some of you may have not felt these impacts directly, but they have occurred and have affected many people. The tax increases over those 2 years were 0.3% and 0.9% respectively. This year, however, we are uncomfortable recommending a budget that will allow services to erode further. So what is the projected tax impact of the budget the Finance Committee is representing? This year's no override budget is projected to increase the taxes on the average home in Sudbury, assessed at $601,800, by $249, from $8,100 to $8,349. The operating override, if passed, is projected to increase that amount an additional $494 to $8,842. If the debt override for the new fire engine, boiler at Fairbanks Senior Center, bucket truck, and repairs to the floors at fire station number 3 is passed, then an additional $24 would result for a total of $8,867. I'll leave this slide up, as I'm sure a lot of you are doing mental calculations right now. Does the Finance Committee realize that this is a large tax increase? Of course we do. But in our opinion, the consequences of living within a no-override budget after 2 years of restrictive budgets would have a negative impact on the services provided by the town and our schools, and is not one we favor. Therefore, the Finance Committee recommends that town meeting approve the override budget before you tonight. Thank you.
Mr. Jacobson, I'll ask you to hold on that motion, if you would, please. Chuck, that in the cafeteria, that they can't, they're not seeing this graph. Is it possible to get it over there? While we're waiting for that, ruling on the point of order, and that is the limiting motion won't come until after the town manager speaks and the two school committee speaks, each speak, and I will ask them to each speak for 5 minutes. Thank you. Town manager.
Thank you and good evening. I'm Maureen Valenti, the Sudbury Town Manager. I've served in this capacity since late 1999, and thank you for giving me the opportunity just to give you a brief overview of the budget request for the town operating departments. This next slide, quickly, our mission, protect public safety, public assets, and a special quality of life, advance the board's goals, continue meeting service demands, retain staff and recognize and reward good performance and comply with all regulations and mandates. The next slide, really quickly, I know you can't read it, but for those who aren't as familiar, the town government, we have about 30 departments, and we cover a myriad of services and have a variety of missions, but they fall into 5 service clusters: general government, public safety, public works, human services, culture, and recreation. The budget that we're proposing for tonight shows that all the additions and our priorities will go to pay public safety and public works. We're trying to focus on them because they've taken some of the biggest hits and because we've fallen so far behind in terms of budget and service abilities for that. We also will focus and continue on careful use of our resources, again, treasuring our department heads or our institutional memory and our abilities for the town, the importance of capital. We'll talk about that later in the capital articles. Quickly on the efficiencies that we've done, just to let you know, we did purchase the streetlights. That's saving us from $20,000 to $25,000 a year in utility costs. We use regional purchasing. We do just refinance some debt to save $500,000. Refunded that over the life of the debt. Unfortunately, the state will get 64% of those savings because they gave us the grant originally, but that's still worth doing. We're always looking for opportunities to be careful. We self-insure for insurance. Everything we can do of to be careful with costs, we do. But that still brings us to the point that we need some more resources for these particular departments. I'm just showing you by department cluster where the increases would be. You can see they're concentrated, public safety and public works, with some amounts going especially into culture and recreation. That's primarily the library. On this police department, I just quickly want to show, it's a slide we showed at the finance committee. The standard for a suburban community, 2 officers for every 1,000 population. We have 27 sworn officers, and that brings us to 1.51 for our officers per 1,000 population. It does show we're low on our staffing. 3 things we're trying to do in this budget here. 1, add 1 patrol officer for half the year. Why half the year? By the time you get through civil service and hiring the person and sending them to the academy, you don't get a whole year out of them. That way, this person will be trained and ready for the next fiscal year. We're looking for getting our overtime budget back up so we can cover, hopefully getting back to 75% of the open shifts. Right now, we're covering between 55 and 60. It's a lot of shifts that are being uncovered. And to provide specialized training, if you see all the new officers as you came in, not a lot of familiar faces. A lot of our officers have retired. With them, they took a lot of specialized training, fingerprint, assault, some other things. Now these people need to be trained if they're going to be able to do their jobs. In the fire department, briefly, this is a chart I showed before. The calls for ambulance and fire service continue to climb over a 14-year period. It's not just population increase. That's events that are happening that we need to respond to. But beyond that, I want to talk a little about the requests we've made for whether we call an assistant fire chief or a deputy fire chief. The demands for what's happening in fire services are changing rapidly. Hazardous materials recognition, control and mitigation, terrorism pre-planning, local emergency planning committees, rapid intervention teams, a whole variety of things are coming and now being demanded on the police chief, the fire chief, and the fire department. We need to be able to respond to those. Just quickly, the managers in the towns around us, Concord, Weston, and Wayland, and I worked carefully to look through our departments. We compared our fire services among the 3, And that wasn't as easy to do. Some people think that's easy to do, but you have to take out where is dispatch, what kind of dispatch, who pays utilities, are they here? Do a lot of data cleaning. At the end of it, we found Wayland and Sudbury spend a lot less per capita for fire services than those other two towns, and our staffing is somewhat lower than the other two towns. But the main thing that came out is they have deputy chief and assistant chief positions, and they spend more on training and prevention and planning. Mike Dunn had been asking for this for several years. He and I tried between us to see what we can do. You can't do it because you keep getting pulled away for operational things. This is a position we very much need. Chief McClain can address that if people have more questions. In the Public Works Department, I'm saying Public Works is public safety too. They've had the least resources and been the most impacted by growth, change, and time. We keep adding roads, drainage structures, walkways. State money, Chapter 90, keeps decreasing. Our vehicle replacement program is in trouble. We need new vehicles. Again, just showing on the staffing, I said we not only have less than the towns around us, less than we had in 1990. And the library, one of the 10 busiest libraries in the state for its population range, fewer full-time equivalent employees, circulates 33% more than a full-time equivalent and comparable. The rest, very small amounts for the other departments. I've got four departments I'm recommending some increase for. The Building Department for Utilities and Maintenance, Board of Health, Council on Aging and Information Services, small amounts of money to give them some additional help when times are tough. Thank you for your attention and support of town services and staff. It's an honor and a challenge to serve you. All of your town staff pledge to continue trying to provide you with the best services with the resources you choose to allocate to us. Thank you.
Please, no clapping. Show your appreciation with your vote. Bill Braun, chairman of K-8, John Flackett, superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Bill Braun, 65 Cato Drive, Chairman, Sudbury School Committee. Dr. John Brackett, our superintendent, will outline the school's budget, but I want to preface his presentation with a brief comment on the school committee's philosophy and our approach in developing the budget. First of all, we deeply appreciate the importance the community places on schools and the support you unfailingly provide. As we all know, we've heard repeatedly, the schools are the principal asset underlying the town's valuation, and it's a privilege to be entrusted with their oversight. Nevertheless, we do not regard it as the mission of the school committee to advance the interests of the schools single-mindedly or at any cost. Our job is to make sure that we provide the best education possible in the context of the values, needs, and circumstances of the town as a whole. Second, obviously, we're all taxpayers, well aware of the growing financial challenge that property taxes in Sudbury can pose, not only to seniors, but to a wide range of people whose disposable incomes are diminishing as costs that are beyond their control continuously rise. With those two things in mind, I want to make clear that recommending an override budget is not something we do casually because we can or won't control costs or because we think schools have a special entitlement to budget growth. We do it only when we've reached the point where it seems the only reasonable alternative, and with careful and often agonizing consideration of all the interests at stake. The major aim of the override budget is to maintain the integrity of the program going forward as it exists now, following the last 2 years of cuts. As costs rise, enrollment continues to grow, and the state and federal governments abdicate the responsibilities they undertook in regulating local education in the first place. When you get down to basics, there are only three things that significantly influence the outcome of education at this level. One is the interest and abilities of the kids. Another one is the skills and the tools, the equipment that teachers bring to it. And the third is the number of teachers each kid, or the number of kids, I'm sorry, number of kids each teacher has to know and understand. Effective education today is highly interactive. So whether we like it or not, assuming that we have good kids, which we do, and assuming we have competent teachers, which we do, the issue degenerates to class size with some attention to teaching tools. And that's what the override budget is largely about. And with that, I'll turn it over to John. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm John Brackett, Superintendent of Sudbury Public Schools. These are the numbers. I'll give you the Cliff Notes version of this tonight. These are the numbers, and by themselves, they really don't say much. I just want to call your attention to the fact that under a non-override budget, we're looking at growth in expenditures of about 1%, and under the override budget, our operating expenditures would grow just a little over 6%. That's over and above the cost of benefits. Here's the causes are complex, but the problem is really quite straightforward. In essence, the cost of doing the same thing we have been doing is increasing at a faster rate than the available revenues, and this is compounded by our growth. What you see on this chart is the increases in major expense drivers for next year. It's not our total budget. It's just major drivers and their increases. And you can see that benefits are increasing about 10.4%. Salaries are increasing about 3.8%. That includes raises and steps for those people who are on that part of the salary schedule. And these are really non-controllable costs. Can we control salaries? Yes. But as Mr. Jacobson said earlier, many of our teachers in our salary schedule are at the lowest of comparable districts. And we need to be competitive in recruiting and retaining quality teachers as part of our mission. You can see our special education costs are increasing by about 8%. These are the costs for the students with the most severe needs who are receiving services outside of the district. Unless you think that our special education costs are outside the norm, they really, if you look at a per pupil basis, our special education costs are at or below comparable K-8 districts, as well as the percentage and the number of special education students that we are educating. Transportation, which is not controllable, is going up about 5%. We used to get revenue from the state to offset that. The revenue for that mandated service went away 2 years ago, but the mandate didn't. And in energy costs, I don't need to tell you, because the school district is facing the same kind of impact that you and I are facing at home and in our cars. On the revenue side, again, these are increases. From Prop 2.5 here in town and town revenues, we're able to cover the benefits. We have grants and offsets that we receive from the state, primarily for special education services that will be growing. And the town revenues then will provide about 1% more to work with. This is under the non-override scenario. I might add that Chapter 70 funding, which is the major funding for schools, will be flat for the third consecutive year. And this is at the same time that we're being asked to do more by the state and by the federal government in terms of services to students. That leaves a shortfall. Given these expense increases and revenue increases, it leaves a shortfall of about $561,000 that we will have to find ways of addressing. Under the override, our portion of the override is about $1.147 million. It allows us to address the beeper that's going off behind me. And I thank you. There's a lot more information that we'd be happy to provide in answering questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Superintendent. Originally, the Lincoln Sudbury had two speakers, Superintendent John Ritchie, who has given up his right to speak in an effort to save it. My notes say that Jack Ryan was supposed to speak, but it seems like that's changed because you believe that he couldn't stay to 5 minutes. So I will ask you to speak, please. Eileen Glovsky.
Thank you very much. So let's go right to the number three, please. I think this chart really says it all. It talks about the difference between the increase in students and the teachers. Our enrollment continues to grow at 60 to 80 students per year. Our funding resources don't allow us to keep pace with that growth. When we don't add teachers every year, there really comes a point where the interactive nature of our teaching style is compromised by the size of the classes. Next. The state's commitment to education has really gone down. According to the 2003 National Census records, Massachusetts ranks 41st for our state's contribution to K-12 education. Federal funding has been cut approximately 11% between 2003 and 2005. State funding to the district was reduced by about 20% 3 years ago and has not increased since that time. Remember, our enrollment during that time increased by about 200 students. Both the federal and state government, while reducing their financial support of our district, continue to impose unfunded mandates on us. These include special education, transportation, which, by the way, as a regional district, we are required to provide and we are legally prohibited from charging for, the MCAS, and No Child Left Behind. Our per-pupil spending during the last 5 years, while our enrollment has gone up 28%, our per-pupil spending has decreased by $500 per student in constant dollars. I think you can see we pulled this out to FY06 in a non-override scenario. Cuts in a non-override budget. One thing I'd like to address here is a misconception about the funding of the building. Any cost saving on the building project will reduce our debt. We are legally prohibited from spending any capital funds on operating expenses. Now, cutting the entire athletic program and extracurriculars, as recommended by some people, would only get us halfway there, and we don't really consider that to be a viable option. While we don't know exactly how the cuts would be implemented, teachers would have to be cut, and likely an administrator. If all cuts were in personnel, it would require approximately 12 full-time equivalents to be cut in order to balance to a no-override budget. Frequently, we are exhorted to live within our means. We don't control our revenue. We don't control the number of students who attend. We must provide service to all. We can't control many of our expenses, unfunded mandates, utilities, pensions, and insurance. We do the absolute best we can with what we have. We rely on you, the taxpayers of this community, to determine our revenue. We knew the last 2 years were tough and chose not to ask for overrides. We made do with less. We need your support this year. Through the challenges the school committee has dealt with for the past 2 years, we remain strongly committed to quality education for all students. Your support of this article will validate our mission. Thank you.
Thank you. Now recognize co-chair of the Finance Committee, Bob Jacobson, for a motion to take up the budget limited to the override amount.
Move that the amount appropriated under the budget not exceed the sum of $67,710,198.
Is there a second? There is a second. You need to say anything else, Mr. Jackson? You're all set. Chairman of the Board of Selectmen, Mr. Drabinski.
Sorry, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen support the limiting motion.
For those of you who couldn't hear, the Board of Selectmen is in support of the motion. Anybody wish to be heard? Yes, sir. Right over here. Yes. Can someone bring the pass the mic down? Aisle number 3. Yes, ma'am. Could you just wait if someone gives you a mic? The reason is they can't hear you in the cafeteria unless you have mics.
Point of order is you've done a thorough job of explaining how to amend this motion, but I'm not certain that the people of the halls understand that this is the place where you, if you choose not to have the override go through, that this is the place, in my understanding, that you vote no. Is that correct?
Great. Mrs. Kaufman, I appreciate your remarks, but that's not quite a point of order. A point of order has to be something related that if someone is saying something irrelevant, you can't use that point of order just to gain access to the hall. So
sorry.
I appreciate what you said. Yes, sir.
Adam Miller, One Knobscot Road. I was just wondering, the number up here is about $63,000 less than what's published in the warrant, and I don't know how that varies.
Okay, you're referring to what number?
The total $67,710,198.
Is greater than what other number?
It's less than what's published in the warrant.
On what page?
Oh, it's greater?
Oh,
yes, it's actually greater. Yeah, look at that.
Hang on. Page 8?
Yeah, it's on page 8. It's the lower right-hand number.
Finance Committee for an answer? Can the Finance Committee address the question?
Most of that was after the warrant was published. There was a change in the debt service for LS, which then required a change in the assessment.
Okay. Are there other questions or comments on the limiting motion? Anybody in the balcony? We missed you last night. Anybody need to speak from the balcony? Anyone from the back of the hall? I see. Yes, Mr. Tyler.
I guess this, is this on? In order for me to understand or decide whether I want to vote on this, and I've heard some excellent presentations that make me believe this is needed, in spite of what you might think from last night, I do support the schools. Now, I'd like to get an understanding from the Finance Committee as well as from the School Committee and Lincoln Sudbury. Sort of an understanding of how this fits into the next 10 years. When we were involved in Peacher, we knew that up until about 6 years ago or so, costs were, the average tax bill, I think, was rising around 6 or 7% a year. And then it started a steep increase, and I think it was going up 10% over the last 4 or 5 years, some number like that. And we have these last couple of years that you mentioned that these increases were deferred. So we had almost zero inflation. Now we have almost 10% with the override. So I'm wondering, what message should we be taking out of here? I'm hearing that we can't control most of the costs in our school system. We can't control benefits, even though it's a negotiated item. We can't ask them to shoulder anymore or anything. So I've seen in the projections that there's going to be a lot more students. So I think it's incumbent on you to tell us how this override fits into the medium and longer term situation. Are we facing 10 years of 6% or 10% increases in the average tax bill in Sudbury? Or is this a one-time request and then you figured out strategies in order to live within the confines of Prop 2.5 for the next 5 or 10 years? Thank you.
The Finance Committee able to answer that question?
If you're looking for the Finance Committee to tell you that overrides will not be needed in the future, I can't honestly tell you that. I don't, 10 years out is quite a distance. A few years out, we are going to have to lobby, do the best we can to try and raise revenue. But if we can't raise revenue, hard decisions are going to have to be made about possibly letting class sizes grow, limiting benefits, unless the town residents decide to do otherwise.
You all set, Mr. Jackson?
Yeah.
That was a question to both school committees. Bill Braun, do you care to answer the question?
I'll try. It's a very good question. There aren't any, as we mentioned, we don't have a lot of control over the rate of rise of some of these costs. So, but we are very conscious of the need to look forward so we're not coming back year after year after year with overrides. So some things we do on an ongoing basis, which is continue to look at more cost-effective ways of providing education with the understanding, though, that the primary axis of learning, obviously, is between the teacher and the student. And that's where most of our costs actually occur. So there's, not hypothetically a lot of opportunity there. The second thing that we're very active in is lobbying with the state legislature to have the state funding formula revised to reflect, as it once did, benefits for communities that have either a very high an abnormally high percentage of their population with children in the schools and or rapid growth. And the third thing that we're going to have to get a handle on by one of a number of means under consideration is what Mr. Tyler mentioned, which is the rate of rise of benefit costs. So, you know, if you look at the key drivers, the key things that raise expenses, those are the things that where we think we're going to put our energy to in an effort to look downstream. Not a lot we can do about utilities. That's a bigger problem than all of us. And I suspect that the healthcare part of benefits is in the large scale a national problem, but there certainly may be some things at the local level that we can accomplish. So those are the things that we're doing to think long term. We're not oblivious to the fact that this is a structural problem, but we also know that we have a short-term thing that we really have to deal with this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Eileen Glusky for LS.
There's not a lot that I can add to this except going back to what I pointed out in my presentation, which is that the state and federal governments have reduced pretty significantly over the last few years their commitment to education while touting the fact that they are in support of education. They have truly shifted the burden of funding education down to the property taxpayers. We will work with our state legislators in looking at the funding formula and hoping to get something, but with the reduction in taxes at the federal level and in the state income tax, there are less revenues to come here to support us. And I would ask all of you to talk to your state legislators as well and look at the federal side as well to try and increase those revenues, because while we may have had cuts, they're really shifting that burden down to the most regressive tax, the property tax.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Row two. Right behind you.
Is this on? Frank Reed, 54 New Ridge Road. In addition to all the figures that we've heard so far tonight, I think it's important that the hall understand that according to the latest figures from the Massachusetts Department of Revenue, there are approximately 254 towns in Massachusetts that have a lower tax rate than the town of Massachusetts for fiscal year 05. Sudbury for 05, and that those include some very familiar and similar suburban towns, Concord, Wayland, Weston, Wellesley, Dover, Belmont, Cohasset, Hingham, Manchester, Gloucester, Andover, North Andover. I could go on. And that's for 05. And this increase that's proposed, this override, is an astonishingly large override, something that we've never seen in this town before. I find it to be staggering and unsustainable. This will drive people out of town. And I personally find it intolerable. And I urge you to vote against this override.
Anybody else wish to be heard? In the back. Yes, sir.
Milton Jones, 29 Moran Circle. In some past FinCom annual reports, I've seen a quote, something to this effect, that what the town needs are more creative ways to reduce expenditures, but at the same time maintain service that we are accustomed to. I'd like to talk about the schools. First, point of information. What is the average class size in the K through 5 classes now, et cetera?
Is there an answer? Mr. Braun, school committee?
Uh,
The average class size in kindergarten through five, which is what I understood you to ask, is about 23.
23?
I can also, I probably should expand on that a little bit, which is to say that that's the average if you divide the total number of students by the total number of sections offered. If you look at a year at a school, it'll vary around that substantially because we have either four or five teachers at each level, that is four or five class sections at each level in each school. So depending on the enrollment in that particular school, that figure may be significantly different than the 23. So 23 is the total number of kids by the total number of teaching sessions.
Thank you. The reason I ask the question is that I have thought in the past it's running around 21, 22. It may have changed. But I also want to compare, for example, what's happening in other towns where, for example, there is no pre-K classes. Number two, there are half-day kindergarten. Number three, there are 24 students in the classroom, K through five. And I'm talking about towns I know about, Sharon and Newton. I looked at the MCAS scores for last year, and those towns, English Language Arts and Math, fourth grade, just about the same as Sudbury. Very nicely high, but running just about the same. So that one of the things that the school committee, school administration, needs to look into is, well, how can we do better or keep the same performance capabilities at lower cost? By, for example, these are the systems are doing. Sharon has 21 in a class. Sudbury, 21, 22. I had 23. Newton, 24. The first time that the MCAS scores came out, one school I know about, which is about 75 years old, 24, 25 students per class, eat lunch in the classroom, there is no cafeteria. That school placed 10th, fourth grade, in the state. At the same time, I don't forget what year it was. Fortunately, Sudbury has come up quite a good way from then. Sudbury, except for one school, also ran. So clearly, you know, it's not a question of how many students there are in a class. There has to be an upper limit, of course. And there, I saw a report in the paper recently that there is a question as to how poorly students will perform depending upon class size. The other thing I'd like to make is this, that with regard to the high school, our children went to the previous high school in 1978, when our eldest graduated. The enrollment in that high school was almost 2,100 students. So we tore down that school to build another one that's going to cost us more in utilities to accommodate some 1,850 students. Where is the prudence in that? I understand, by the way, that school was about 50 years old. And you have to understand where I'm coming from. I went to a school that was over 200 years old when I went there. So, you know, it was in a third world country, maybe a fourth world country. And we had an outhouse built in. I graduated from MIT. Not too bad for coming from a place like that, right? So we need to think outside the box and do something along the lines of what FinCom has been recommending for some past years. We need to get creative. in the private sector where I worked, we did a job, it comes in, after we've been cut a few times, and then suddenly we find that we have to do the same job for less money and on time, because we have to get creative, and we do that. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
We have a mic down here. Down here. Mic down here, please.
My name is Don Hutchison at 15 Pendleton Road in Sudbury. I'd like to make some comments about, there's a lot of gloom about the fact that our costs are going up inexorably. One of the things that people here might be interested in is that although everyone assumes there's a lot of the use of computers in schools, that usage is almost entirely limited to administration, to doing research for students who are researching for papers, and for writing papers. The amount of usage of computers for instruction is almost zero. And that is something that I think should be addressed. It's being addressed at the university level. Our neighbors in Maynard, there is a organization called the Virtual High School, which provides courses, several hundred courses for several hundred high schools across the country. In Concord, we have the Concord Consortium, which is dedicated to increasing the productivity and effectiveness of education. And I suggest that these are areas that we should be looking at. There is a considerable body of evidence that much can be done in this area. I would like to urge that the school systems in Sudbury look to that and develop a program to evaluate and make greater use of computers in the classroom for educational purposes.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Thomas Holliker, Concord Road. One of the points, well, first of all, I would like to say that I also am appalled by this override, the size of this override, and intend to vote against it. I'm sympathetic that many of the departments of the town probably need additional money, but I have less sympathy with the schools. In the high school, the student to teacher ratio, as nearly as I can calculate, is between 7.5 and 8 to 1. And I don't see any need, great need, given that ratio, for additional staff. This, of course, does not include the coaches. If the coaches were thrown in, this ratio would be even smaller. In the Sudbury schools in 2005, the ratio of students to teachers was around 14.4, and if the special education teachers were added to this, this number becomes 10.2. Again, a very low ratio. Now, in this matter of becoming creative, I have offered one suggestion, and that is that extracurricular affairs, particularly in the high school, should be funded privately and removed from the town budget. I believe very strongly in the necessity for public education. I've spent my life in education, in college and graduate level training. But I think that over the years, particularly the high school, has evolved a set of activities that have relatively little to do with education and should be privately supported. And on this point, I should like to ask the school committees, what is the total cost, direct and indirect, of extracurricular activities as of the past year, last year?
Bill Braun, school committee.
Yeah, we're getting the total cost of extracurricular activities. I can tell you that we do assess a fee that largely offsets those. And I will also confess that we do that reluctantly because many of these extracurricular activities are an essential adjunct, or at least an important adjunct to education. And so give me the total here. So we do it reluctantly, but we do it because we have to in order to make the budgets work. Okay, athletics is $37,902. And what's paid by the revolving fund is $24,225. The revolving fund is what we use to manage fees. So our total payment on extracurriculars is $13,677 out of a $27 million budget. Huh? Stipends for teachers who run clubs is $20,664, and of that, $14,600 and so is paid by the through the budget, and the revolving fund pays the remaining $6,000. So those are approximately the costs of the way they break down in terms of what we pay and what is offset. Just 2 seconds worth of comment on the prior speaker who. I think may have created some misconceptions. Sudbury has half-day kindergarten, which the speaker implied that we did not. We only have half-day kindergarten. And Newton has or must have, as we do, pre-K classes because they are required by special education laws. And so that's not apples and apples. And as we all know, Newton's costs per student are well, well above Sudbury's. That's about all I need to say on that at this point. If there's more, go ahead.
Mr. Braun, can you pass that microphone up to LS here? No, in front. Eileen Glovsky, Lincoln Sudbury. Your mic's not on. Flip the switch.
I did show this on the screen. For the athletics, $334,000 net of the fees that we take in from the students. And our extracurriculars are about $85,000.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
James Gardner, Longfellow Road. A further question about the $36,360 that is in excess and represented by the limiting motion over the amount published on page 8 of the budget. I believe the initial answer was that money was all in the debt assessment for Lincoln Sudbury. And my question is sort of a, where is the money coming from? We had a override vote last week of over $3 million, and the apportionment of that money is very detailed but does not show this $36,000. Is limiting motion going to end up exceeding the amount authorized by Prop 2.5 and by the override budget?
Does the finance committee have an answer to that, or the town manager?
I'll try. Because the debt is excluded from 2.5 when it was voted years ago for the debt service, as it goes up or down, depending on if debt is issued, it's raised outside of that, so it doesn't affect the override number. That's increasing the amount of levy. This is outside of that amount.
I see. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Ivan Lubash, 25 Barbara Road. Excuse me. Just a couple of brief comments. All the curves show that the school population is increasing. May I remind the halls that back in the 1970s we had the same thing. What happened, we closed three elementary schools and one of the wings of the high school was closed. So the curve is not going to always go up. Dot-coms included. Secondly, for the high school, I heard on the Channel 8 that Lincoln pays only for the number of students who attend the high school. Those who go to private school are excluded. Carrying that thought further, Sudbury residents whose children go to private high schools should also get a deduction. Because I think the first, going way back, the Lincoln Sudbury systems had agreed that it would be proportional. But I believe that was proportional to the number of residents or students, not those who attend the high schools. It's not going to be a great amount, but I think that should be corrected. And also, just those two fast comments. We were in Washington the other day, and we learned that the latest congressional office building, which is much larger than this, much better furnished, has two basements and a train line to the Capitol, came in at $73 million. And fourthly, my own private comment, this wonderful auditorium, I described it to a friend in Hudson, and Hudson has a fabulous auditorium. They have at least four aisles. And when I described this to him, he said, "Oh, Disney World." Thank you.
Ms. Van Dyke.
Hello? Okay. Kirsten Van Dyke, 37 Landham Road. I have lived here almost 10 years, and I moved to Sudbury, the town of Sudbury, for its historic character and landscape. I drove by the town center one day before I had children, found it an incredibly quaint, not as traffic-y location, and 3 years later was able to afford a house in Framingham, which we quickly fixed up and moved to Landham Road for another fixer-upper, the least expensive house on the road. Nothing much was done over many years except for safeguard my road from traffic increasing, traffic of young families attending these great schools that I learned were part of the package when you become a Sudbury citizen. However, not what attracted me here. In the almost 10 years I've been here, I think back about my childhood and attending Pinkerton Academy in Derry, New Hampshire, where Robert Frost taught, and being a freshman there and not being allowed to walk on the senior steps of the hallowed halls that Robert Frost taught in was an honor and a privilege. I want to remind the citizens here that class size, new schools, should not be the focus of your child's education. Quality teachers, students that are focused on their studies, that appreciate their township, their citizenship, that's the focus of being a citizen for Sudbury. It's not having an Apple laptop in front of you at study hall. It might be a four-year-old textbook. Knowledge is strength. It's also what provides us an avenue to become better citizens for not just Sudbury, but for all over. I am proud that my children do not need the finest and the newest and the best of everything. We shop Walmart sometimes, and I look great. I'm proud to be a citizen of Sudbury. I'm proud to stand up at town meeting every year and urge you to keep the entire township's personality in mind when you vote for overrides of this magnitude. it's affecting everyone, not just the senior citizens, not just the people that want to stay in town, that grew up here and are just starting families and would like to buy a house and stay in town. It's affecting those that moved here 10 years ago and may have to leave because they can't afford it. Sudbury is going under tremendous change, and we have to change with it. We can't be strict and immovable with our expectations for class sizes when the town itself has changed in size. And as our previous speaker just said, it's in flux. If you're dedicated to Sudbury's history, current or in its big picture, you'll realize that this wave will pass. If we teach our children to be patient, be more disciplined in class so the teachers can deal with a larger class size, those students will be part of the process that allowed a lower tax burden for everybody. Thank you.
There's someone in the cafeteria who wishes to be recognized. Mr. Blacker?
Yes. Mark Libby, Patricia Rose.
Hello? Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, Mark Libby, Patricia Road. I was hoping the school committee could address the disconnect that I'm, at least in my mind, between the class size we're hearing about in the high school and the pre-K through 8, and what I get when I look at the student body and divide by the number of full-time equivalent teachers. I'm hearing, you know, class size of 24, and as the previous speaker pointed out, it looks like there's 14 or 15 in the elementary schools and 9 in the high school. So I'm curious if we have more than one teacher in a classroom.
Thank you. Bill Braun, local school committee. Is there a mic?
Well, John's digging for the numbers. I can tell you qualitatively the basis for the difference. Our class sections, our classes and our class sizes are based on the number of professional, accredited, full-time teachers that are considered classroom teachers professionally, and it's by actual count. And when John retrieves it, I will read you the number of students in each grade at each at each school, in each class, if that's of use. But that's the source of the numbers that we gave you. Other numbers that divide, you know, sums that divide some calculation or some count of number of staff, or divide number of students by some count of number of staff, are going to be at odds with the actual class size numbers. Some classes require aides because of the either the number or the type of special needs students that are involved. Some classes have aides because they're large or they're very early on, like first grade. We have part-time Genesis aides that spend a fraction of their time in each classroom. They're, at this point, they're only a small part of part-time. So you're going to get erroneous calculations. You can't just divide number of kids by number of staff or by some subset of staff and end up with an accurate count. And so I would urge you to just we don't make these numbers up. They're real. They're subject to audits. I would urge you to go by the actual official school numbers. Number one. Number two, with respect to the growth issue, that's except for the growth next year over this year, the whole issue of growth is rather irrelevant to this. We're not at this point asking to build a new building. Nevertheless, there are some forces that will continue. That will cause growth to continue, and we should be aware of those. So,
thank you. Can you hand the mic to LS? And can LS give us an answer to that question about class size? Superintendent Ritchie.
Hello. I really don't want to take much time because what I have to say essentially echoes what Mr. Braun said. I think you come up with a number like 8 if you take all of the adults working in the building and divide that by the number of students. That includes librarians, counselors, special ed teachers, special ed aides, but I can tell you just from watching the classes in the main academic areas, anybody who's a parent here knows the number is nothing like 8 to 1. Teachers student load has increased by 15 to 20%, and our class sizes have gone up dramatically. So I think it's, as Mr. Braun said, a question of taking the whole aggregate, which gives a misleading number.
Can we have Mr. one more moderator. Speaker from the cafeteria, please?
Stuart Hogan, 65 Mossman Road. Move the question, please, Mr. Moderator.
Is there a second to that? There is. The question has been called. We'll have a vote here on just the call of the question as well as in the cafeteria. All those who are in favor of terminating debate only on this limiting motion, please do so by raising your cards. All those opposed. The question has been called. We are now going to vote on the limiting motion. Can we see that on the view graph, please? Mark, can you? You see the limiting motion before you. I will ask the hall, all those who are in favor of the limiting motion, please do so by raising your cards. All those opposed. Thank you. There's an overwhelming majority both in the auditorium and in the cafeteria. The limiting motion has passed. We will now move on to the main motion. I recognize co-chair of the Finance Committee, Bob Jacobson, for the main motion on the override budget. Mr. Jacobson.
Move that the town appropriate the sums of money set forth in the warrant under Article 5 in the column FinCom Fiscal Year 06 Override for Fiscal Year 2006, except as follows. Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School debt assessment, $2,461,086. The following items to be raised as designated by transfer from available fund balances and interfund transfers. From ambulance reserve for appropriation account to 200 public safety, $210,189. From free cash to 900 unclassified and benefits, $800,000. From abatement surplus to 900 unclassified and benefits, $543,450. From retirement trust fund to 900 unclassified benefits, $25,000. The sum of $5,107,457 set forth as Sudbury Public Schools employee benefits to be immediately transferred and added to item 900, town employee benefits, so that the employee benefits total will be $8,231,764 to be expended under the direction of the town manager and to authorize the purchase of equipment funded under this budget by entering into lease purchase agreements.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. Jacobson, do you would like to comment further?
Finance Committee is in favor of this motion.
Chairman Drabinski for the Selectmen.
Will the Selectmen support this motion?
The Board of Selectmen supports this. Okay, if you remember what we said at the beginning, we're now on the budget checkoff list. I'm going to go over the major categories one by one, and as I go through each one, if someone has a question on that specific area or a motion to amend, please raise your hand, whether here or in the cafeteria. Yes, we're just going to hold up 1 minute. They're getting organized in the cafeteria.
Okay, we're ready to proceed. Does anyone have a motion to amend or a question on the schools, any of the schools, Minuteman, LS, or the local school? Hang on. Yes, sir, over there. Can a mic be brought over to that gentleman?
Patrick Noonan, 6 Spruce Lane, Sudbury. I just moved to town from Washington, D.C., where we had heat pumps, and they didn't work very well. This school has heat pumps, and currently we're spending anywhere from $40,000 to $58,000 a month for electric fees for just the high school. I noticed that in the budget, the override includes money for the utilities. How much do they expect to spend in the future for this? No one can know. But what are we doing to change this? What efficiencies are there going to be gotten out of the system or any changes? Does anybody have any ideas?
Is that question directed to the local schools or LS or both?
LS.
LS. Superintendent Richard.
Just very quickly on that, we are in the process of getting the whole HVA system balanced, which takes almost a full cycle to run through, but have already realized significant efficiencies just from the summer when, in order to get the system commissioned, everything had to be running. So our costs have decreased steadily since the summertime, and as we get everything in balance and turn the lights off when we want and have a system which is actually finely tuned enough that we can really have classroom lights that are geared to exactly when people are going to be in there, that I expect that we're going to be able to realize more and more efficiencies as the months and years pass.
Other questions? Yes, sir.
James Gardner, Longfellow Road. My question is about the transfer of money from the SPS employee benefits line down to line 900. A little concerned that in future years we're going to be hearing that the cost per student that we're spending in the local schools has gone down dramatically, and I'd like to understand the benefits to the town of moving that money around. Because
town manager?
Thank you. The reason that we show it the way we do is so that we can get a fuller understanding of the costs of the elementary school system, but it truly belongs in the, altogether, all the benefits belong in one line item. You must have a treasurer to administer a benefits program. It's in conformance with state law. So this is a mechanism, the way we show it, so that it's more transparent how much of the benefits are attributable to the schools versus the town, but it must all be spent out of line 900.
Other questions? Mr. Hall.
Thomas Hollicker, Concord Road.
Is this on?
Yeah, it's on. Okay. I'm looking at page FC17, and I'd like clarification in the high school budget of the meaning of estimated receipts. It's $473,000, roughly.
Eileen Glusky, Lincoln Sudbury.
That's largely comprised of user fees, the fees that we charge for the extracurricular activities, for the athletics, parking fees, and a variety of other fees that we impose upon the students that we can.
Did I understand you correctly to say that the unreimbursed extracurricular activities constitute an expenditure of roughly $400,000?
Yes.
Okay. I should like to move to amend the high school budget
to decrease the amount by $400,000?
Mr. Holly, two things. One, in the future, you're not allowed to make a motion to amend after you've begun speaking. You have to make your motion in the beginning. Number two, you're not allowed to make a motion to amend until you give it to me in advance of having made it. So could you please write that out? I'll recognize you in a few minutes and bring it. We need three copies, one for myself, one for the town clerk, and one for Jan Silva, so we can show it to the entire hall. Thank you. Mr. Tyler.
Two questions to the K-8 system. First of all, do you have any of these lease purchase things? Because I don't even understand what that is. Sounds like we're authorizing future budgets, which I think is beyond the authority of a town meeting. If you lease purchase, sounds to me like a contract that's going to go for multi-year. So I'm wondering if they're involved in that. If so, I'd like to know about it. And then second of all, if you spend the $25,809,552 as you're planning, how many additional unfunded liabilities will you be accruing for teacher pensions as a result of those expenditures?
Those are two questions for the local school. Mr. Tyler, can you repeat the first question that was the short one? Hang on, wait for a mic.
Are any of these lease purchase agreements part of the K-8 budget, and if so, what are they?
Thank you. Mr. Braun, you prepared to answer? Can't hear you.
Shouldn't have been. Those are copying machines. And we've made a determination that that's the most cost-effective way to use those things. With respect to, what was the second part of the question? Oh, teacher pensions. We don't have a liability there. That's the Massachusetts, what's it called? Mass Teachers Retirement Fund. As far as benefits go, in the budget, the benefits for all staff that we plan to have are included in the benefits amount that you saw up there. That's one of the reasons we do it this way, is so that the town can see what the total cost of school employees, school versus town versus high school employees are, including their salaries and their benefits. With respect to the previous question, there will not be a change in the trend analysis. The per pupil expenditures have always been calculated in the same way. They're calculated by the state using adjustments where appropriate, so that you're comparing apples and apples when you compare districts. So we needn't worry about that. I hope that answers both those questions.
Any other questions from the hall on schools? Yes, sir, Mr. Payne. Can I have a mic down here in the middle of this aisle? Thank you. Just flip the switch.
Go. On page FC15, the top line item there is a school committee item, expenditure item, that indicates that in FY03, around $320,000 were expended by the school committee. This is Lincoln Sudbury School Committee. In FY04, there was an amount for a little over $307,000 compared to $86,000 that was budgeted. And then in 06, $590,000, and similar amounts in 06. Can we get an explanation of what those expenditures are for?
Yes, Eileen Glusky, LS.
Those were legal fees for some special education cases that included some settlements for tuitions to schools.
Was that large increase in FR4?
It was just a couple of cases that came to us at that particular point in time. It was highly unusual.
you. Any other questions on schools? Mr. Hollicker, you're running out of time. What's that? Bring up the two. We'll share. And you can remain in your seat, and we'll get your mic in a second. Wherever the mic is here, can we pass it up to Mr. Hollicker? Mr. Hollicker, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to propose something, and you can tell me if you like it, say, so moved. Okay?
Okay.
Can I have your attention, please? Mr. Hollicker, would you like to move to amend Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School operating assessment by decreasing the budget amount there by $400,000?
Yes.
I hear you say so moved.
So moved.
Does that receive a second? Thank you, it does. Mr. Hollicker, you now may explain why you want to, how that relates to a specific topic.
The information that we received earlier in the evening from the Lincoln High School School Committee was that currently the unreimbursed expenditures for extracurricular activities amount to some $400,000. The rest of extracurricular activities are supported by fees, student fees. And the point of this amendment is to place all of extracurricular activities on a fee basis or otherwise on a private basis and remove this from public funding.
Thank you, Mr. Hollicker. Lane Glovsky, LS. Why don't you, Mr. Hollicker, give that to the runner? Eileen, why don't you come up here?
I think it's important to note that everyone on the school committee really believes that athletics is an integral portion of the education that we provide at this high school. We were loath to include any fees whatsoever. We started with a fee in FY90 of $100.
went to 125 in 99. In 04, we went to 135. And currently, and in the budget for FY 06, we're looking at $165 per student per sport, which for some families could be particularly onerous. A back-of-the-envelope calculation, if this were to pass and we were required to make these sports fully self-supporting, would be approximately $550 per student per sport, which I think would effectively make it out of the reach of many of the students within within our town. And I think it would really compromise the education that we provide here. I think if many of you look back to your experiences in high school, there may be one, there are teachers that you remember, but oftentimes the experiences of taking, working with a team, being successful, are extremely important, and the ones that you carry forwards with you in, into life. And we would definitely be against the passage of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
I think it's important that the hall understands how the school budgets work. Both the LS and K-8 school budgets are bottom line budgets. They are not restricted by any line items like the town is. So while I understand Mr. Holliker's point, reducing the budget by $400,000 does not necessarily mean that athletics would have to be reduced. The school committee, in its prerogative, could take the $400,000 anywhere they would like in the budget. And the Finance Committee is not in favor of Mr. Holliker's motion.
Yes, Selectman?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. As a parent of two students who were soccer, lacrosse, and hockey players at LS, I think the academics and athletics program is integrally interrelated to develop excellent student athletes and citizens. And I think to do this to our students is unconscionable. The board does not support this amendment.
We have someone in the cafeteria who wishes to speak. Blacker?
John Hardenberg, 7 Tickling Rock Road. I too believe that the extracurricular activities are an important part of the public school education. I think that if you look outside of the education, what these kids are going to be doing, if they're not involved in school, there are plenty of other things that they could be doing that might cost the town a little bit more than $400,000.
Please, no clapping. Question has been moved. Is there a second? All those in favor of the call of the question, both here and in the cafeteria, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It's well more than a two-thirds vote in both halls. So we'll now move to the amendment.
Do you have that written out?
Is it possible to show that on the view graph? That's it? Okay, you see the amendment is in front of you on the view graph. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by raising your cards. Thank you. All those opposed? Pretty overwhelming here. We'll check the cafeteria. It's also overwhelmingly negative in the cafeteria. The amendment has been defeated. Somebody, excuse me, may I have your attention? Somebody handed an amendment. Can you come forward, please? I'm going to
read a motion, and you tell me if that's what you'd like to do. Move to reduce the Sudbury Public School gross budget by $1,147,941 so that the appropriation is $24,661,611. That's $24,661,611.
Yes, that's the FinCom's recommendation for non-override.
Just say so moved.
So moved.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? It does in the back. Can you tell us you want to make a presentation on your amendment, please?
Just briefly.
Excuse me. Did you give your name and address?
My name is Fred Boland, Candlewood Circle. I've been through a number of different towns which have faced exactly what Sudbury is facing today. Notably in Belmont, which interestingly was mentioned previously tonight, that has just as good a school system, perhaps, as Sudbury's. There were dire predictions by their version of the FinCom, the school committee, so on and so forth, that they were going to have to lay off 25 teachers if the override wasn't passed. 25. Funny thing happened on the way to the mall. It was defeated by the voters, and not a single teacher was laid off. Not one. But a single teacher. Somewhere, by town forcing them to, they found that money to keep those teachers. And yet, their school system is still extremely good. I think it's time we sent our various boards a message. They can't keep asking for more and more and more and more. They're all good people. They're all doing what they think is right. But we know that, like Congress, they keep asking for more and more. And there has to be a point where the people who are asking for money have to take responsibility for it. And I'd like to ask the voters to help them along a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee is not in favor of the motion.
Selectmen, please. Yes, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen is not in favor of this motion. And to answer the individual's comments, the FinCom and the Board of Selectmen are somewhat independent of the budgetary process. We look at the entire town as a unified town. We don't look at the schools as entities. And we came to the unanimous conclusion that this was required. And based on public safety concerns that the both school committees presented to us, and concerns that the town manager presented to us, we take our job very seriously. We're all citizens of this town also. So the impact that we feel, we're not some isolated body working in some dark room, not feeling what goes on in the community. This is all of our communities, and we understand the decisions we make here affect all of us. None of us are immune to the decisions we make. And we make them in the best judgment and the best due diligence we can, and we present them to you. Unfortunately, we don't agree with your assessment, but I appreciate you bringing forward the motion. Thank you.
For those of you who are a little confused, turn to page 8 in your warrant. And the very first item is Sudbury Public Schools gross. If you look at the last column, it's $25,809,552. That is the override amount recommended by the FinCom and the Selectmen. The amendment is to reduce that amount to the next column to its left, to the non-override amount of $24,661,611. That's the motion to amend. Can I ask the school committee to comment, please?
The school committee obviously does not support this for the reasons that I think we've described pretty well in full. The budget is developed carefully and responsibly, and people aren't simply willy-nilly on an unconsidered basis coming back to the town for money because we lack discipline or intelligence. So I urge you to not to vote for this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. This gentleman right here. Please stand so the runner can bring you the mic. Can you pass the mic back? Yeah, just flip the switch.
Mr. Stubbs, I live in Weir Hill Road.
And I want to be someone who stands up and speaks in favor of quality schools in Sudbury. I think it's one of the primary shared assets that we all have. It's what made me move here. It's why your housing values go up. And I'm adamantly opposed to this amendment.
Yes, sir. The mic is being passed to you. Just try to speak in it first, and then you can flip the switch.
Jennifer Gardner, Longfellow Road. I'd just like to clarify. It seems to me that the override money is being used to cover increases in costs that the town, in cases, can't control. For example, increased benefits, to some degree, increased salaries. Is there some extent of this money that's being used to provide new services? I think that's important to understand if we're trying to totally eliminate the override.
Thank you. Finance Committee wish to answer that question?
The schools may be able to answer better, but our understanding is that this budget will keep them a little bit better than level service from fiscal year 05 and not get them anywhere near the level they were at fiscal year 04.
Okay. Any other questions? Let me just finish. Mr. Tyler.
As we prepare to vote on this, I'd like to remind the hall that this $1,147,000 is part of a $3 million override that Mr. James, it's a senior moment, our selectman last night basically told us that housing values were going to, our houses were going to be basically unsaleable if there was a $3 million addition to the property tax bills in Sudbury. So as you contemplate this particular reduction, you might think about it in the context that was mentioned last night, which is that your house is going to be a lot less sellable when the tax rate goes up as a result of this. That's one point. The second point I'd like to make when you think about this is that there's no doubt in my mind that if a school committee wants to maintain those services, they could find creative ways to means test many of the extras given to the students beyond the state mandated levels of service, so that all Sudbury families who in fact were stretching their budgets to be able to pay the fees would be granted exemptions if they applied and went through a lengthy scrutiny of their finances, whereas those with multi-hundred-thousand-dollar incomes would in fact be paying the bulk of this $1,147,000. So I think that as we move into an environment where the call is that we can't do things that are appropriate to do without means testing, I think it's appropriate that we look at sort of the school budgets as we have kind of the bare bones budget, and then the rest of it, let's look to the school committees to get creative in terms of figuring out ways to impose fees with means testing so that everyone can participate, and those who in fact, we hear people say, well, if we had to have a $500 athletic fee or something like that, that would be unaffordable for some people. And granted, it would be, and we should then have a means test and allow them to participate for free. And for all those others, I think that when they're basically passing the burden, particularly the transient households in Sudbury, of which we have so many that come here to take from our wonderful schools and then leave town. I think the high school just recently adopted new rules that you actually had to live in town for your senior to graduate because so many people were leaving during that final year because they had a looser rule. So that maybe we'll recapture a little bit more of the cost that we've been flowing to those people as well. So I think that as you think about this, I'm not going to recommend your vote, but I think those are just two issues. There's been a lot of creative ideas discussed tonight, and maybe there's another one that if we hold their feet to the fire, that maybe like the gentleman that mentioned that they always figure out a way to do the project when their budgets are cut down when they bid it, and the guy comes back and says, we're only going to give you so much, and they figure out a way to do it. Maybe this is the time to really send that message.
Thank you. There's one speaker who has been waiting patiently in the cafeteria, so we wish to let them hear. Larry?
Yes, Dave Costello, Balcom Road. I have a sense of history about the affairs in town and the way spending has been going. And you have all heard it argued in the past that if we have one less student in town, we'll save $10,000. In fact, you heard that last night. If you have one more student in town, therefore, you're going to need to spend $10,000 more. And based on the numbers in the K-8 system, next year we're going to have 67 more students, so we need to spend $670,000 more. The non-override budget, which is what is being proposed in the amendment, is an increase of $227,000, which isn't going to cut it. And the comment was made about, asked about new services. Each student that is added to the system is an additional new service that needs to be paid for and serviced. So, therefore, I think that going with the override budget for the schools as well as the rest of the town is the way to go, because we keep, last point, we talk about benefits, but those are mostly health care costs. And all of our health care costs are going up at double digits, same for the town. The town employs the 750 people that work for the town. We've got to pay, along with the employees, for those increases. So to say that everything should be within a 2.5 ceiling every year is going to be awfully tough. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Rupinian, you have your hand up. Question's been moved. Is there a second? Second. We'll move. We'll now vote on the moving of the question. Requires a 2/3 vote. Everyone in favor of moving the question, please raise your cards. All those opposed? There's an overwhelming 2/3 majority in both halls. We'll now move to the amendment, which you see on the screen. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? There's an overwhelming majority here. Let me check the cafeteria. The reason it takes a bit longer there, it's overwhelmingly opposed also in the cafeteria. The amendment fails. Okay, are we ready for a vote on schools? Any further questions on schools, or can we proceed to 100 general government? We are now on 100 general government. Anybody have a question or an amendment? There are no questions or amendments. We'll move on to 200, public safety. Any amendments? Any questions? We're going to move on to 400, public works. Any questions or amendments? We'll move on to 500, human services. Any questions or amendments? We'll move on to 600, culture and recreation. Any questions, any amendments? We'll move on to 900, town employee benefits.
heard the town manager.
From someone in the
Maureen, could you describe what cost-sharing provisions there are for town employees in the employee benefit packages?
Town manager?
The benefits provided for the employees include health insurance, and those vary according to the plan. The one set of plans are 75-25 split, town picking up 75%, the employee 25%, up to the HMOs, which can be 90-10 split. The benefits also provided in package includes the pensions. Under the pensions, it depends when the employee was hired. Contributions range from 5% of their pay up to 9+2, depending if they were hired in the more recent years, which you can see exceeds what Social Security is in terms of a contribution towards the pension. The school employees, I think as was mentioned, the teachers contribute to their own pension, but the state picks up the balance of that. The split is between the state and the employee. On the town employees, it's between the employee and the town as the employer for that. There's various other small benefits that are in that budget. For instance, there's a Medicare we're required for all new employees that's in there that we have to make a contribution towards. Tiny amounts for life insurance, small amounts for dental. It's not a very generous dental plan. I think we split that 50-50. Nope. 75-25. Thank you. My assistant town manager down here oversees the benefits program and has more information in top of his head than I do.
Thank you. We're on 900 town employee benefits. Any other questions or amendments? And lastly, we have also 900 unclassified and transfers. Any questions or amendments? Okay, we're ready for the final, for the vote on the main override motion. Is that what's before us here, Jan? Okay, what you see on the in front of you is the main override motion. Before I call for a vote, I'm going to repeat what I said before. Those of you who are here just for this budget article, I strongly suggest you do not leave the hall, because folks can ask for reconsideration of this anytime during the evening. So, we're now on a vote. Everyone in favor of the main budgetary override amendment motion before you, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? There's a very large majority both in this hall and in the cafeteria. The budget, as you see it, or as you did see it on the screen, has passed. We're going to move on to Article 6, Fiscal 05 Budget Adjustments. Selectman Drabinski to make a motion. John, you can do it right from there if you wish. Article 6.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move the appropriate sum of $55,000 to be added to the amount appropriated under Article 4, FY05, Operating Budget, the 2004 Annual Town Meeting under Public Works, said sum to be raised by a transfer of $55,000 from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. Kubinski for a presentation.
Mr. Moderator, the Finance Director, Sue Peterson, will make the presentation.
Thank you. Finance Director Sue Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This article is really a housekeeping article. It will remove a deficit from our books, which originated in the early 90s, when several street projects were not fully reimbursed by the state Chapter 90 program, as had been anticipated. Under Chapter 90, towns pay for authorized road improvement projects up front out of their own funds, and then at the conclusion of the project, grant reimbursement requests for these expenditures are submitted. Often these projects continue over several years. To explain why we're now dealing with something that goes back a decade or more, I should give you some historical perspective. Any deficit in any fund at year end, according to the Department of Revenue, has to be raised, and the amount of free cash certified is negatively impacted dollar for dollar as long as that deficit exists. However, until recently, municipalities were allowed to report the aggregate balance of all capital projects at year-end. This meant that any deficit in any individual project would be offset by balances in other projects, and therefore we wouldn't have any deficits to report, and there would be no negative impact on the free cash. However, we're now required to report each capital project separately, showing individual balances for each project. No longer are we allowed to offset any deficit with other project balances. We were hopeful that continued research would determine that there had been a recording error that we could have corrected with an adjusting journal entry, but that proved not to be the case. And so this year, upon certifying free cash, the Bureau of Accounts at the Division of Local Services advised us that the town must now appropriate funds to clear that deficit. The Bureau has warned us that failure to appropriate the necessary funds could result in withholding our free cash certification in the future and may delay the quarterly state aid payments in fiscal 06. Passing this article will favorably impact the amount of free cash that will be certified and available at the close of FY06, as well as ensure that the quarterly distributions of state aid will not be delayed. I urge your vote in favor of this article. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob Jacobson from the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee is in favor of this motion.
Anybody care to be heard on Article 6? No. Hearing none from either the cafeteria or here. There is someone who wishes to be heard waving a card. Can we have a mic over there?
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. The presentation was a little hard to hear in the back of the hall, so maybe this was covered and I just missed it. But why were these amounts not reimbursed by the state back in the 90s that we expected to have reimbursed, which caused the original debt in the first place?
Thank you. Town Manager?
Yes. Checking down through my notes here. Just says when... early 90s, when certain street projects were not fully reimbursed by the state's Chapter 90, as had been anticipated. See, was there any more you can add to that in terms of why that was? See if we get the finance director to add to that.
Sue, stand a little closer to the mic.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Oh, no?
That's better.
Okay. There were several projects that we found were, some of them were cost overruns, we had no control over. There was a project, the Landham Road Bridge, that was closed by the state as an emergency situation, and some of the costs that were incurred that we thought were going to be reimbursed by the state, such as temporary traffic lights, were not covered. The other thing that comes to mind is we thought that there are probably all of the people involved in this are no longer with the town, and we think that possibly there may have been a situation where we did get reimbursed, but they were deposited into the general fund
which means that money would have closed out to free cash in previous years. Nowhere can we prove that we requested reimbursements and have not received them, so that's not the problem. It's various things. We've spent a lot of time with the auditors trying to determine exactly what they are, and we're satisfied that it was probably either a bookkeeping error or these cost overruns that we had no control over.
Okay, that means that all the employees who incurred these costs have all been fired, so it's no longer an issue. Anybody have any other questions? Article 6. Hearing none. Are we ready for a vote? All those in favor of Article 6 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Thank you. Article 6 passes overwhelmingly, required a majority, was almost unanimous. Article 7, recognize Sue Peterson to make a motion to indefinitely postpone.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to indefinitely postpone consideration of Article 7.
Is there a second? There is. Reason is, I assume, because there are no unpaid bills. Yes?
That's correct, Ms. Marley.
Thank you. I assume there are no questions on Article 7. Great. All those in favor of Article 7 signify by raising your hands. Indefinite postponement. All those opposed? Thank you. Article 7 passes overwhelmingly. Moving on to Article 8, Fiscal 06 Solid Waste Disposal Enterprise Fund Budget. Marty Raganese of the Finance Committee will make the motion.
Move to appropriate the sum of $399,843 for the Solid Waste Enterprise Fund for Fiscal Year 06, and further to authorize use of an additional $18,793 of Enterprise Fund receipts for indirect costs. Such sums to be raised by $278,636 in receipts and $140,000 in retained earnings of the enterprise.
Does anyone require an explanation of why this is different than what appears in the warrant? The motion is in front of you, not in your warrant. Anybody have any questions on Article 8? I see none. Larry, give me a buzz if anyone in the cafeteria has a question. None. All those in favor of Article 8 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It is unanimous here. There is small opposition in the cafeteria. Nevertheless, Article 8 passes overwhelmingly. Article 9, Fiscal 06 Pool Enterprise. Marty Raganese of the FinCom will make the motion.
Move to appropriate the sum of $426,212 for the Pool Enterprise Fund for fiscal year 2006, such sum to be raised from $426,212 in receipts of the enterprise, and further to authorize use of an additional $58,434 appropriated under account 900, Town Employee Benefits in Article 5, fiscal year 06 budget for indirect costs.
Does that receive a second? It does. Marty, for a presentation?
The FinCom approves this article, recommends support of this article.
Chairman Drabinski for the Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This enterprise fund is what keeps the pool open. The Board of Selectmen strongly support this article.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, sir, Mr. Holliker. Can we have a mic here?
Thomas Holliker, Concord Road. Each year I rise to address this question when it comes up. It comes up every year. This enterprise fund, the pool, is supposed to pay for itself. That was the original intention, and we're more or less promised every year that that's going to happen. but it doesn't. Now, the difference between the pool receipts and the tax levy is only 12%. And it seems to me that that would not be an onerous increase in usage fees for the people who use the pool. Now, I know that I can't move without writing it all out. Right? I mean, I need to write it out. Yes. Yes, all right. Well, I shall sit down and try to write it out.
Yeah. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 9? Someone wishes? Yes, sorry, couldn't see you. Mike over there, please.
Thank you. John Donovan, Old Orchard Road. I'm just curious of what town employee benefits are we paying for this essentially semi-private, semi-public pool?
Thank you. Park and Rec wish to answer that question or somebody else? Yes, Dennis, did you hear the question?
Yes, I did.
Dennis Bononi, Park and Rec Director.
The benefits would include 3 full-time employees at the management level, supervisors, and also a head lifeguard.
Does that answer your question, sir? Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 9? Yell if I can't see you. I don't see any hands. So we're going to move to the question of Article 9. All those in favor of Article 9 signify by raising your cards. I'm sorry? What is the amendment going to be, Mr. Hollicker? Can you just tell me orally?
The amendment tax levy.
Decrease the tax levy of $58,434 to zero on Article 9.
I am informed by legal counsel, Mr. Hollicker, that your amendment cannot be heard. And the reason is because this money has already been appropriated under the budget article, Article 5. What you can do is move not to use the money that's already been appropriated.
I see. Is there time for me to write this out or not?
I'm afraid it's too late. We already started the vote. So I'm gonna ask him to please sit down. But please, next time, just in advance, just write it out on a piece of paper and bring it up here. And we'll be glad to entertain it. No, the question wasn't moved. I asked if people wanted to vote on it. We're now going to move to vote on Article 9. All those in favor of Article 9 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed... Thank you. It's nearly unanimous in the cafeteria, and there were about a dozen negative votes here. Article 9 passes overwhelmingly. We'll move on to Article 10, which is the capital budget override article. Recognize Kirsten Lupinian, chair of the Capital Improvement Planning Committee, for motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to appropriate the sum of $273,000 for the purchase or acquisition of capital items, including capital equipment and construction improvements, said sum to be raised by transfer of $15,974 from 1995 annual town meeting Article 19, library construction, and $100,999. Thank you. $1,999.75 from 1990 annual town meeting Article 24 fire headquarters, and $1,000 from 1997 special town meeting Article 3 fire station 2 repairs, and $4,026.25 from 1997 special town meeting Article 1 purchase Meacham Meigs property, and the balance to be raised by taxation and to allow the purchase of equipment hereunder by entering into a lease purchase agreement.
Does that receive a second? It does. Before, Mr. Pinion, you make the presentation, I'll point out that this only requires a majority vote because there's no borrowing here. If there were borrowing, it would require a two-thirds vote. Ms. Rapinion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Kirsten Rapinion, Harness Lane, Chairman of the Capital Improvement Planning Committee. Before I present Article 10, I just want to quickly review what this committee actually is. The Capital Improvements Planning Committee is required by our own town bylaw and a Mass General Law, I think 41, to make recommendations to the town for a capital budget. We study the proposed projects involving major tangible assets which have a useful life of 5 years or more and a single-year cost of $10,000 or a multi-year cost of $100,000. The capital planning process is that the capital needs and requests requiring town meeting action for the next 6 years are submitted to the committee. The meetings are held with staff to gain information, and the Capital Investment Committee evaluates and prioritizes these capital requests. Along with the staff, the committee develops a financing strategy and prepares a recommendation, which we then give to the Finance Committee. The criteria for the evaluation that we look at is that these projects typically are either a risk to public safety, they preserve a deteriorated asset, such as trucks, improvement of operating efficiency, a coordination of services and planning, systemic replacements, and an equitable provision of services, so that not one department is getting more than another. The recommended projects this year total $273,000. Those include the upgrade to the town telephone systems, the Atkinson pool, which is the dive well and filter room heaters, the chemical monitoring system, and the pool vacuum system. Additionally, there are town building improvements, the DPW fleet replacement, as well as to finish the fire department exhaust systems in station 2 and 3. If you have further questions on these particular items, we do have people from the departments, but those are also in your warrant on page 11. The Capital Planning Committee urges support of this capital budget because, as we know, the problems typically get worse if they're not addressed. The departments need their equipment in order to get their jobs done and to meet the town's expectations. If we delay longer, and the longer we delay, we'll have to do a lot of these projects at once, and it'll wind up costing the community a lot more than we had intended, because the longer you put these things off, the more costly they become. The committee has thoroughly examined the projects that are before you, and they are very important to the community. We urge your support. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Can you wait for a mic? Can a mic be passed to Mr. Levington?
The article, please.
Can we put the article back up on the view graph, please?
There's a reference to a lease purchase. I'm curious if that could be explained to us. Is the entire cost of the equipment involved covered by this article, or does the lease purchase involve a commitment for future town meetings for further expenditures?
Town manager?
We have been doing lease purchase for the really sizable DPW vehicles. If you look into your warrant under the DPW budget, you will see an annual amount allocated for a payment of a lease purchase of these right now. So the way that works is if it's a three, four, five-year, Bill, are they usually about 4 years? Each year we appropriate the amount for that year's lease installment. At the end of that period, the piece of equipment belongs to us. If the town fails to appropriate in that year, then the company can take back the piece of equipment.
So there is a commitment, there is an implied expense in future years that's not included in this budget, but that we're not legally obligated to pay.
Right. We're not legally obligated right now. There is a consequence if we don't. It's not like debt where we've pledged our full faith and credit and we have to make that payment in the next year. We have the option of not making it. But there's a downside.
Are the future amounts in the warrant?
I'm sorry, what?
Are the future commitments included in our warrant? Is there someplace we can see what they are?
No, they're equal increments for each year. I don't know, Bill, if you have those for which ones we have. We don't have those right here at this time.
So there is a future commitment. We don't know what it is.
I'm not sure. I just don't think we have it here right now. We can take a quick look. I don't know if we have that in the capital budget for the out years. Let's take a quick look at our budget report. Capital report.
While we're looking at that, we'll answer that question in a minute. We're all set. Just for the record, there is no such motion or statement of a point of information. If there's a question you have, just raise your hand and I'll recognize you. While we're waiting, can we hear from Marty Raganese of the FinCom?
Yes. The Finance Committee feels the items in Article 10, including the override portion, are necessary and critical. The upgrade of the town's phone systems will ensure reliable communications, particularly in emergency situations. New pool equipment is necessary for safety at one of our major assets. Maintenance is important for aging town buildings. Vehicle replacement at the Department of Public Works has fallen far behind schedule and is an urgent need. This article will also accomplish a transfer of existing funds from completed articles from prior years to finish the exhaust system installation at the fire stations. Due to legal requirements, these existing funds may only be used for other capital projects or purchases. Part of the operating override, this was passed at the ballot on March 28th. The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article, including those items subject to override approval.
Thank you. Bill Keller for the Selectman.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This is the first of two capital articles that have been submitted, and this is for items that are funded within the operating revenues without the need for borrowing. Town tries to annually allocate approximately 1% of its operating budget to these operating capital needs. Operating capital are those items that, due to their nature, cost, or frequency with which they need to be replaced, don't lend themselves to debt financing. For the most part, it is because individually each item is not that expensive, or if it is fairly expensive, and there are similar items, one is bought each year. DPW truck might be an example of that. You need a few of them to buy one per year. Debt capital, on the other hand, is for items that should last 15 years or more, and something by itself would wipe out the entire 1% budget for the 1 year, and that's capitalized, and that you'll see in the next article, number 11. The staff and Capital Improvement Planning Committee go through an exhaustive process each year to examine the capital assets of the town and recommend those projects that contribute to our overall ability to provide critical town services. For the past several years, we have postponed replacing or repairing many of our assets in an effort to minimize capital costs. But there are a number of projects that are overdue for attention, and to continue to defer them is not recommended for safety reasons and because it only increases the backlog of costly projects. Any examination of how the town handles its capital needs shows that Yankee thriftiness is the order of the day in Sudbury. When possible, the town acquires used vehicles and equipment, uses them long past their expected useful life. When one department is done with an asset, they pass it down to another. The phone system is an example of that. When there is no way the asset can possibly be given any more service, it might be traded in or used for parts. But even with that approach, some funds must be allocated to keep our capital assets performing as they should. The items in this group, we feel that funds for the DPW fleet replacements have been delayed much too long, and this past winter indicates that without reliable trucks and equipment, timely removal of snow and ice from roads and walkways cannot be done. The Board of Selectmen urges support of Article 10.
Bill Place, DPW Director, to answer the question raised by Mr. Levington.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Moderator. Ongoing leases right now, the six vehicles are at least at 4 to 5 years at a total of $123,628. I came before the Capital Committee with people for additional vehicles over $215,000. passage of this article will give you $163,000. We're still going to be short. What's happening is these vehicles are backing up. They should have been replaced years ago, and they're not. We've got 1982, 1985 vintage. We do a five-year projection on the leases. I'll be looking probably next year at $448,000. I'm not keeping up with the state as it is. This is going to be one step closer to getting to what we need to function properly.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
I would just like to ask the speakers if they could slow down a little bit and speak a little louder so we can all kind of understand. It's a little hard sometimes when you're looking down reading and to hear you clearly.
That'd be great.
What
we'll also ask speakers to identify themselves by name and address.
I'm sorry. Fred Boland, Candlewood Circle. Can we get the warrant put back up on the screen?
The motion?
The article.
Jan, can we put the motion back up?
What vehicle are we replacing?
Is that a question for DPW?
I guess, yeah.
Okay.
I think it's plural vehicles we're replacing. One's a 1982 Mack truck, stand-up. The other one's a 1985. A Bombardier snowplow, which is a 1984. The year of this one, it's number five from the year of its case right now, but I think it's a 1989 Mack truck.
Thank you. I'd like to ask the Finance Committee if they intend to finance these replacement vehicles for what it sounds like about 20 years. Lease them for 20 years instead of buying them outright?
Is that your question?
That's the question.
Finance Committee wish to answer that, or does the DPW wish to answer that?
Can you restate the question, please?
We're replacing vehicles in the 1985-88 era. Is it the intention to replace those vehicles under lease and lease them for a period of over 20 years?
No, the lease period doesn't exceed 5 years. We've only been doing that for the last few years to try to get through the financial situation we've been in. Our hope is to get back to doing outright purchase because there's so many behind them that you have almost an equal amount of money we should be spending every year. This article is an attempt to lease purchase some of the bigger ones again, but wean ourselves off of doing that. But again, we don't do that for more than 5 years.
Do you have a schedule written out? Plan for this?
We have a complete capital improvement program that lists a variety of things. We do put that on the town website that's out there for anyone to take a look at. I think it has that level of detail in it. I'll double check and make sure. But there is a 2 or 3 page list of vehicles and other capital assets for the town that we plan 6 years out.
Okay, thank you. And the final question is, you have a library of $2,000 capital equipment in there that wasn't in the warrant?
Just capital for the library?
Yes, library.
Hang on a minute.
That was the transferring of funds that were used for the library over to this project here. That's what he's talking about.
Okay, thank you. This young lady right here.
Thank you. I'm having a slow night, but I do remember my name, Hale Lamont Havers, 173 Morse Road. What completely befuddles me is I understand we already have voted yes for capital item Article 11. Moving back to Article 10, are we doing this? Is this going to be a new override that you are asking? Would you please explain?
Town manager, please.
Thank you. There are two articles here for capital. The first one, Article 10, which is on the floor right now, does not require an override. It is built into the levy. So there's no addition. The funds are already there. We're asking town meeting to appropriate them. The next article, Article 11, which we will ask for an appropriation on, was
the funds for that do have to be raised in excess of Proposition 2.5. That was the debt exemption question. So that would be moved to next. This one, there's all we need is the appropriation. The funds are there. Yes.
Any other questions on Article 10? Yes, Mr. Hall.
I have Thomas Holliker, Concord Road. I have two quick questions. The one concerns the apparatus for the Atkins pool. Are we to expect that the Atkinson pool enterprise fund will eventually reimburse for that, or is this something separate from the enterprise fund? That's one question.
Town manager?
This is separate from the enterprise fund. Our recommendation is that the enterprise fund, while it can generate their direct operating costs, does not appear to us to be able to fund systematic replacement of these pieces of equipment that's used that seem to have a great impact on the safety of the users.
Okay. The second question concerns my puzzlement about the updating of the phone system. Does the town have a special telephone system separate from, for example, Verizon or some other commercial telephone service? And also I'm puzzled by this suggestion in the written commentary to the effect that one of these systems will be moved from the Flynn building to the fire department, but the implication earlier in the written material was that the telephone systems just are not reliable and don't work very well. And it seems odd that one would be shuffled over to the fire department if it doesn't work very well.
Town manager?
Thank you. That's a good question. The fire department's one, along with the one at the community center, that are unreliable. The Flynn building is very reliable. What we're trying to do is put a different one into the Flynn building because that's where our servers are. That's where a variety of other things make sense for this new project, and then take the very reliable Flynn one and move it to the fire department. We're always trying to do that with our equipment, moving our computers, our trucks, move them around to see where we can make them fit, so that we only purchase one new item as opposed to a new item for every building. There's a second part of that question.
Do we own our own system as opposed to Verizon?
Oh, yes. Most businesses, I think, small business, end up, you don't just purchase a phone at Radio Shack and then subscribe to Verizon. You have a package, a system. We do ours through Centrax for the most part, the ones we have now. And they're able to do voicemail to have minimum number of lines that you pay for, but route those calls to the individual desks, et cetera, with that. The packages, some of them we have now, we acquired from the Sudbury Public Schools when they upgraded or when they opened their new buildings. You install those in the building, you get those set up, and actually they're pretty computer-based these days. You have a computer company called Ronco that comes in and programs them for a new user and a new capacity where you have to have them. So they're packages. And we're moving them around to fit the best use for the building.
Thank you. There was a gentleman back there who had his hand up. Yes, sir.
Steve Blanchett, Brighton Path. I'm really curious about the Meachin Makes property acquisition. I'm quite certain we bought that about 8 or 9 years ago for about $4.5 million on Marlboro Road, and no one has picked up on that. Kristen, I'd like to address this question to you. Can you comment what that's about? It's an additional chunk of land. How much is that?
Town manager?
Can you explain that, please?
Did everyone hear the question?
No.
Great. Maureen, why don't you repeat the question, and then you may answer it.
If I understood it correctly, there's some curiosity, I think, in general, that we've transferred money from some existing articles, some of which you'll remember from years ago, one of them being the Meachin Meg. When we do capital articles, often it's our best guess at the time what the amount is. We need an appropriation for a certain amount. Often we go ahead and, for reasons we need to, we've borrowed for those funds. And then at the end of those projects, there's little bits left over. We didn't need to spend it to the last bit. Those monies just sit there in these articles. What we're asking permission and from Town Hall to just transfer those to the next project, which is the fire department's continual enhancement of that air exchange system so that the firefighters aren't breathing diesel fumes. So you're right. Meech and Meg's was a number of years ago. Small amount of money left in that one. I think that one's $4,000. Fire station, that was a 97 article, $1,000 left there. Fire headquarters, that's from 1990, a little under $2,000 left there. And the library construction project. All of those are balances left in articles. We can't return them to bring down the tax rate because they're voted a certain way in articles legally, but they can be transferred to a similar use. That's what we're recommending to do, close out some of these old articles and use that to bring down the cost of these projects.
Thank you. Any other questions on Article 10? Yes, sir. 1 minute. I just called on someone. You'll be next.
Is it on?
Gentleman down there.
Again, John Donovan, Old Orchard Road, and I hate to belabor this Atkinson Pool thing. It's the old joke, we just passed a $5 billion budget, we're going to argue about 35 cents. But I'm concerned, as one of the previous speakers said, that every year this pool, which is supposed to pay for itself, essentially, is supposed to be self-supporting, not all of us use it. It's something that people subscribe to if they wish, yet it doesn't seem to want to pay. And it's like having a business and coming to, you know, whoever it might be, the government saying, I got to fix this, but I haven't got any money. Can you pay for it so I can keep in business? You have a choice in business. You either go out of business, do without, or increase your price. You know, I know it's a small amount of money, but, half a million here, 20,000 here, it starts to add up some real money. I'd like to have it in my, tax reports.
Thank you. This gentleman right here, you were... Question's been moved. This has been seconded. Yes, it has. All those in favor of the call to question signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? The call is over, well over two-thirds in both halls. We're now voting on Article 10 as you see it on the view graph. All those in favor of the capital budget override as you see in the view graph signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Nearly unanimous in both halls. The Article 10 passes overwhelmingly. Moving on to Article 11, capital item and items, debt exclusion, Kirsten Rapinian for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
I'm surprised you couldn't hear me from the beginning, but I will speak up. Article 11 is moved to appropriate the sum of $650,000 for the purchase and installation of the items or the remodeling, reconstruction, and making extraordinary repairs to the buildings as applicable set forth under Article 11 of this meeting and for all expenses connected therewith, including bond and note issuance expense, and to raise this appropriation, the Treasurer, with the approval of the Selectmen, is authorized to borrow $650,000 under Mass General Law, Chapter 44, Section 7.
Does that receive a second? It does. Ms. Rapinian for presentation.
Thank you. This article is the article that we passed at the general election. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it was quite a number that passed this question. These are the items that are typically too large to be put into the annual budget. These are the big ticket items, the big equipment. The CIPC recommends four projects that total $650,000, including the issuance costs. The town will issue a five-year bond, and the first-year debt service is estimated at $150,000. These are expensive items, but they provide a service to the community for many years to come. Each replaces an asset that is well beyond its expected life. The first one is to replace the fire engine. Engine 5 is a 1972 International. It has served well past its expected useful life of 15 years. This will cost $360,000. The priority here that the CIPC recognized was its public safety and impact on future costs. It has been repaired and repaired and repaired, and I don't think we could repair it any longer. The second item is to replace the fire department bucket truck. This is an estimated cost of $75,000. Again, the justification is this was approved at the 2004 town meeting, but the used trucks with the needed specifications that we were looking for were not available in the $25,000 range. This particular bucket truck was acquired, I don't even know the year. Do you have the year, Ken? It's a 10-year, yes, it's 10 years. And it, again, has served past the estimated useful life and, and now has significant maintenance issues and safety issues. Replace station 3 floor. This is an estimated cost of $90,000. This is a 40-year-old floor, subjected to tough wear over years, and it's needed for the safety of our employees. During the wintertime, this area ices over. There's been slipping. As you can see, the cracks in the pavement, and it also causes wear and tear on the trucks. This is also done in Station 2 back in 1997. Again, we're going to replace the Fairbank boiler system. This actually is for the entire building. Yeah, is that correct? I just want to make sure. This is for $130,000. The justification here is that the engineering report indicates significant safety issues of aged boilers. The Fairbank Center, again, is our emergency shelter. If something were to happen in the community and we had to get to the Fairbank system, to the Fairbank building, and this system wasn't running properly, then we would not have anywhere else to go. The Council on Aging, the school department, the recreation programs would all be affected if the boiler were to fail. The maintenance and utility costs are extremely high due to the age of this boiler. And the savings through the replacement of this particular boiler would be estimated at $25,000 annually in utility costs. And the Capital Improvement Committee urges your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Selectman Keller.
Selectman, unanimously urge your support. Again, this is an item, four items that are expensive. We don't want to pay for them in 1 year's budget. That's why we're bonding it over 5 years. At the end of the 5 years, our tax bills will go down a small amount because we finished paying for it, but the items will continue in service, hopefully, for many, many years to come. We urge a yes vote.
Thank you. Marty Rangany for the FinCom.
This capital item debt exclusion will be bonded over 5 years, you're hearing this again, at an approximate cost of $150,000 per year and will be excluded from the Prop 2.5 tax levy limit. It is past time to replace Fire Engine 5, the bucket truck, and Fire Station 3's floor in the interest of public safety and the safety of our firefighters. Fairbank houses five important town functions, as well as meeting space, and serves as the town's emergency shelter. Therefore, replacing this 50-year-old boiler system is a priority. In addition, replacing this outdated system is expected to yield significant savings. This issue passed by a 2-to-1 margin on the ballot on March 28th. This article also will be the increase for an average on the average house of $24. The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Thank you. Anyone wish to be heard on Article 11? Yes, sir. Mr. Sack.
Daniel Sack, Knobscot Road. On page FC56, there's a description of the stabilization fund. One of the items it says it's used for is large equipment purchases such as fire engines. Can somebody tell us how much is in the stabilization fund now, since it's going to be the next article? And my second question depends on the answer.
Thank you. We'll have it for you in one moment.
About 1,600,000.
I see from Article 12 we're about to put more money into that fund. If we have $1,600,000, why are we doing a debt exclusion for this equipment instead of spending that money?
The intent is in the future, I'm sorry. Thank you. The intent is in the future to have it so that taking that kind of money out of it doesn't affect our amount of reserves. We're recommended to have about 5% in reserves. Most entities and governments, towns should have about that amount in reserves. The stabilization fund is our only emergency rainy day funds, and we've been trying to build that up over several years, although we haven't been adding to it since about fiscal year 03. What we're hoping is that we'll get to that level, that it provides both our liquidity, our rainy day, our emergency money, and then we can use it to fund these types of acquisitions. We don't feel it's at that level yet. The selectmen will be moving to IP any addition to the stabilization fund because we don't feel there's any additional funds we can put into it this year, but it is part of our strategic planning to begin adding more funds to that. I think we're about halfway there in terms of where we'd like that fund to be able to get. It's a key part of our AAA credit rating. It's a key part of our financial health and stability that we have some reserves.
Any other questions on Article 11?
Yes, sir.
Can we pass them? Can we pass the mic this way to the front? Thank you.
Yeah, Adam Miller, Knobscott Road. In the presentation up here, the bucket truck was quoted at $75,000. In the, as it's printed in the warrant, it's quoted at $50,000. And I was wondering how those numbers add up.
Town manager.
Yes, thank you. The total estimated price that the fire chief has looked at for the vehicle that has the kind of specifications that he feels he needs for this vehicle are about $75,000. Last year under in town meeting 2004 was appropriated $25,000 because the hope was and the expectation was we could find a used vehicle in that price range. He was unable again to find one in that price range. The appropriation we're looking for this year is an additional $50,000 to add to the $25,000, which is sitting in this article, to make up that total of $75,000.
Thank you. Any other questions on Article 11?
When they, presumably they're going to sell these old trucks, what happens to the money?
Can we?
I'm sorry, my name?
With two things. A, can we have your name? And
my name
next
is
time,
Fred Bolin.
The Boy Scout will recognize you as me.
Okay.
So I now recognize you, and you can tell us your name and address. I
apologize. Fred Bolin, Candlewood, sir.
Thank you.
The question was, they're going to sell the trucks, presumably. What happens to the money they receive from selling the trucks?
Town manager?
In general, if we can trade them in against the price of it as opposed to just selling it, we will try to trade them in. I think Chief McClain can tell you what the plans might be for these vehicles here that we're looking to replace.
I was just looking for what happens to the money. Does it just sit there again and then will be at some mysterious time in the future reappropriated to some third use, or will it go back into the general funds, or will it not be used at all?
I probably am better to answer that one. Any funds that come in, if we sell an asset, it has to go into the general fund. The law dictates that. It becomes part of our free cash at the end of the year and is available for appropriation.
Thank you very much. Article 11, any other questions? I see none. We're ready for a vote on Article 11. All those in favor of Article 11 signify by raising... Oh, excuse me. Before we vote, this is a two-thirds vote because there's borrowing involved. So we'll keep that in mind. All those in favor of Article 11 signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. Thank you. We're just waiting to hear from the cafeteria. It was well more than two-thirds in this hall. The next four articles are going to be indefinitely postponed.
No, it's okay.
always like being last.
Both halls, well more than two-thirds on Article 11, it passes. We're now going to move to Article 12 and ask John Drabinski for motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The town manager took away my thunder, but I move to indefinitely postpone Article 12.
Is there a second? There is. Drabinski?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. As the town manager explained, because of budgetary constraints, you don't feel it's appropriate to put money into the stabilization fund at this time. However, the board feels that in the upcoming fiscal year that hopefully we can put money into this fund. And I think as the town manager said, the stabilization fund was one of the key elements for us getting a AAA bond rating. And as I stated in my State of the Union address here, State of the Union, I've taken over, State of the Town address, that the town is committed to keeping that AAA bond rating because we save a significant amount of taxpayers' money in any capital projects we do. Thank you.
Marty Rangnes for the FinCom.
The Finance Committee recommends indefinitely postponing this article.
Right. Would anybody like to be heard on the indefinite postponement? I see none. All those in favor of indefinite postponement, raise your cards. All those opposed? It's almost unanimous in both halls. Indefinite postponement of Article 2 carries. We're going to discuss Articles 13, 14, and 15 together, but we have to vote them separately. I understand that Michael Fee, who's going to make the presentation, will be indefinitely postponing all three. No, you can just move the first one and discuss all three.
Michael Fee, Henry's Mill Lane. Mr. Moderator, I move to indefinitely postpone Article 13.
Is there a second? There is, Mr. Fee.
Mr. Moderator, I move to indefinitely postpone Article 14.
No, we're going to, I'm sorry. 13, why don't you discuss all three now, and we're going to vote just on that, and then we'll make the motion after that. We have to vote them separately.
Very good. I'm aware of the hour, so I'll be brief. I just wanted to make a couple of comments about why these articles are being indefinitely postponed. The petitioners that brought forward these articles are a group of hardworking volunteers who are deeply concerned about the degraded condition of many of the ponds and waterways in town. As you may know, the Hopbrook waterway system has suffered extensive damage over the years as a result of the Marlboro wastewater treatment plant's dumping of phosphates upstream. This phosphate causes eutrophication, which allows invasive plants to prosper and ultimately choking off the entire water system from late spring to early fall. The Grist Mill Pond and the Carding Mill Ponds, which are the closest to the wastewater treatment facility, are the hardest hit, and it's quite tragic because these are the ponds that really frame the face of Sudbury's greatest, or one of Sudbury's greatest assets, the Wayside Inn. In recent months, you may be aware of the fact that the town has taken some significant steps to remedy these issues. It has elected to engage in the appellate process surrounding the issuance of the federal and state permits for the wastewater treatment facility at Marlboro. It has also, the selectmen appear poised to constitute a ponds and waterways committee whose charge it will be to assess the quality of all of the ponds and waterways in town, as well as to come up with a master plan to deal with their use and their preservation going forward. It's equally important, however, that we focus on the near-term cleanup and remediation of the ponds that are already so damaged. Article 13 sought funds to conduct a wildlife study, which would be required by the Conservation Commission in connection with any type of permitting or remediation for these ponds. Article 14 sought funds for an in-depth study of a variety of potential near-term remediation efforts for Carding Mill Pond. And Article 15 sought funding to conduct a harvesting program that would actually remove unwanted plant growth from Carding Mill. The group discussed these warrant articles with various town boards and interested persons throughout town, and the Conservation Commission voted unanimously to support all three articles, as did the Planning Board. In our discussions with the selectmen, it was suggested to us that community preservation administrative funds might be available in, to fund the studies called for in, under Articles 13 and 14. And in subsequent discussions with that committee, it appeared to us that seeking CPA funds would be a better method of accomplishing these goals than trying to overburden an already tight town budget this year. Finally, the Hopbrook Protection Association has generously offered yet again to fund a significant portion of the expenses associated with harvesting Carding Mill Pond in the summer of 2005, thus eliminating the need for additional funds under Article 15. So to all of the individuals and all of the committees that I've just mentioned, we're very grateful for your efforts in connection with these articles, and we look forward to working together with you in the future to solve these problems in Hopbrook. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Nealon for the FinCom.
The Finance Committee supports the motion on the floor to indefinitely postpone Articles 13, 14, and 15.
Thank you. John Dubinsky.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen is committed to working with the Ponds and Waterways Committee, the CONCOM, the Wayside Trustees, the Board of Health, and the Planning Board to move forward in reclaiming the quality of the water in our surface water. Our town has been impacted by the Marlboro Wastewater Treatment Plant. We will be working very diligently with these committees, and we recommend their postponement.
All three motions?
Yes, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you. Anybody want to hear, be heard on any of these articles, but only on whether or not they should be indefinitely postponed? Yes, sir. No, excuse me. You're going to have to grab a mic.
Martha Cole, 14 Churchill Street. It's just, this began at 10:30, and I was wondering if anyone from the Hopbrook Protection Association is here, the Board of Health, some of these other groups that were named. And if are any of those people here to present their side of the story?
I don't know whether they're here or not, Mrs. Cole, but the issue is whether or not you want to indefinitely postpone these three articles.
Okay. I think that it would be better to table this to the first order of business tomorrow so that the people who have worked very hard and put up money and everything can be here to discuss the article.
Is there anyone here from the Hopbrook Association or the Board of Health who wishes to be heard? Hearing none, we're going to move forward with the articles.
Okay.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to be heard on the indefinite postponement of Articles 13, 14, or 15? Seeing none, we'll proceed with a vote only on the motion in front of you, which is to indefinitely postpone Article 13. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed... Thank you. It's unanimous here. And it's nearly unanimous there. If the individual proponent of Article 13 passes, Mr. Fee for a motion on Article 14.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Motion to indefinitely postpone Article 14.
Let me see the second. You see, we've already heard from the select. It does. We've heard from the selectmen and the FinCom. Anybody wish to be heard on the indefinite postponement of Article 14? I see none. All those in favor of IP on 14, thank you. All those opposed, it is unanimous here. And just about in the cafeteria, IP of 14 passes. Article 15, Mr. Fee.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to indefinitely postpone Article 15.
You receive a second, it does. The Selectmen and FinCom have already reported. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 15? I see none. All those in favor of indefinitely postponing Article 15, raise your cards. All those opposed, thank you. It's unanimous in both places. Article 15, the indefinite postponement of Article 15 passes. It now being after 10:30, do I hear a motion to adjourn to tomorrow evening to 7:30 p.m.?
So move, Mr.
Is there a second? All those in favor? All those opposed? Thank you very much.
I was ready. Just call me Gatsby. All right, so I get the Gatsby done tomorrow. Oh, yeah, right. What a way to... I was going to say, what a way to start a meeting with a Gatsby discussion.
know why it's maybe as much as a million.
Hey.